Hi, this is Lorenzo Elin on the Production Specialist, a podcast series of personal accounts from individuals and companies in emerging and frontier production industries. On our fourth episode, we have Peter Bart, a film and media composer from Belgium. He continues to reside in Belgium, where he runs his own studio, writing music for Belgian media and advertisements. His late father had been a principal at a music school, consequently exposing Peter to music at a young age. Through his classical music upbringing, it led Peter to the timely discovery of film music, and most prominently, the Star Wars soundtrack by John Williams. Years later, after the passing of his mother, he wanted to reconnect to his younger self and decided to pursue film scoring as a career. He recently had the pleasure of working on his first Hollywood feature film with director and actor David Oyelowo. Peter, welcome to the show.
It all started really with that 8-year-old boy and his Star Wars LP in his hands, reading every little letter on the album. And at some point in my life, after my mom died, I said, look, I have to reconnect again to that little boy, to that first idea, to that first wonder that I experienced when listening to film scores. And I started studying at Berkeley online, orchestrating, composing, contrapoint, so that I could kind of reconnect with my classical upbringing, because my dad was a principal of a music school and he pushed me on a classical path. But at some point in my life, I decided to go into sound. So that was the initial spark. And then, of course, I studied a lot and I started doing independent films, first for free and then for very little budget, or like the directors like to call it, labor of love. But it was interesting because it can say, yeah, I want to do film scoring. But if you've never done a film, you don't know, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of, you're partly also a filmmaker. So you have also to think like a filmmaker. And that's a different muscle than a musical muscle. It's more about story. It's more about reacting to picture. So doing these films, these very independent films, was like a film school in some sense. I have a sound studio here in Brussels and we do a lot of advertising work. So at that point when I started doing these independent films, that was alongside this advertising work. So it was mostly evening jobs. It slowly moved to more important films like Facades that I did for Nathalie and Nathalie Bastiers and Kat Bales. And then one day The Waterman landed. So yeah, that's a bit the journey.
From what Peter says, writing film music isn't the same as what you would call normal radio or casual listening music. Here, Peter explains the exact responsibilities of a film composer and what it means to be one.
Well, you have to make the music. Of course, you have the film composer and you have the music supervisor, but that these are two different jobs. The film composer really works in close collaboration with the director and sometimes with the producers, but mainly with the director, to translate his vision on a story into music and to help the story flow to the picture. That's the main responsibility of the composer. It's not the composer's job to be the hero of the film, to really work in service of the story and the vision of the director. And that's an important thing to know, is always think story. We're telling a story, basically, in film. That focus is really important.
Film scores need to accompany the film to enhance and evoke the dramatic narrative of a scene. But as Peter states, you have to think like a filmmaker, and most importantly, bring out what the director entails. First step is to watch the entire movie with the director in a thing called a spotting session.
A spotting session is just you watch the film for the first time with the director, and you just talk through the film. You say, look, here I feel something. The thing that I did with David was really just sit with him, watch the movie, and if you felt a certain scene need the music, stop the movie and talk about it, and then move on. And of course, when I got in, they edited a lot of my demo material in the film. So I knew already where they wanted music, and there was just try out and say, look, maybe we have to score this scene through to the next scene, or this is too long. It was just adjusting some details, but a lot of work was already done.
Before the composer is brought on, the film editor, or if the film has a music editor, they will have had a conversation with the director about filling in the movie with temp music. Temp music, short for temporary music, is a tried and true method of using pre-existing music as a reference for the composer. It can quickly help the composer establish the mood and tone of the underlying scene. However, the director can become extremely accustomed to the temp track, culminating in a vicious condition known as temp love. When Star Wars: A New Hope was being edited, George Lucas had used Gustav Holst's music as temp music. You can hear the similarities from the orchestral suite, The Planets, by Holst, and the Star Wars soundtrack by John Williams. Holst? Williams.
I had a very learnful experience about temp music. When I was working on Facades, I was a bit arrogant. They were editing and there was temp music on it, and I had some, I don't have to listen to that, you know. Just gonna feel the film. And so I started composing, and then each meeting we had was, but we still like the temp better. So they really knew what they wanted. And then at some point they said, look, I'm going to now really focus, listen to every cue with the temp and see not what chord or what melody or what harmony, but just what the temp does to the image. What brings the temp to the story and how? And that really helped with that mindset. When I listened to the temp and saw it on the film, I really could like get why that it worked or why the directors chose that piece of temp on that scene. And that really helped me. And since then, I have another relationship with temp, because it's a sort of communication between the director and you. And that's how temp should be looked at. The problem is that you, of course, have temp love, and then sometimes you hear in a film that you say, oh, okay, it was already done in the demo.
Although he may have had that problem in Facades, when Peter was brought onto the Waterman, he created about 30 minutes of demo music for David. They loved it so much that they ended up using his demo music as the temp track. So when he eventually was brought on, the themes and such were previously written and ready for development.
But I nailed almost all the themes that are now in the film. I already had them in the demo. It was just a matter of working with those themes and elaborating them. And so the work, the bone work, was already done in the demo.
There are different ways to score a film. There's non-diegetic and diegetic scoring. Diegetic music emanates from the film itself. The characters can essentially hear it. The wedding scene in The Godfather is a perfect example of this. The music essentially speaks for itself. They're playing traditional Italian music, helping to establish their strong Italian roots to the audience. Non-diegetic music, on the other hand, can be referred to as an underscore of a scene, revealing a character's psychological state, or suggest how we, the audience, should emotionally interpret the images on screen. The famous Psycho shower scene comes to mind here.
You're just responsible for the scoring music. You're not responsible for the songs. And you also don't have anything to say about the songs. That's really the job of the music supervisor. Occasionally, and it did happen on The Waterman, there was one scene where I had the sentiment that one song wasn't really on the right place, or it shouldn't be a song there. And so I invited a couple of composers and editors from Belgium to my studio and showed them the movie just to get some feedback. And they were all like having the same sentiment, like there should be some score on that spot. So I talked that through with David, and he said, look, try something. So I made then the cue. It's called Enter the Forest. And it worked. It was really an important cue. It was a pivotal moment in the film where they really go on their journey into the movie. The real journey starts. That's the only thing that a composer can do. You can make a proposition if you feel that a certain song is not in the right place.
The soundtrack you were listening to was Enter the Forest by Peter. You're probably wondering how such music is created in the first place, and how Peter sets to create a stimulating auditory world.
Yeah, you have to know your basics and listen to the great composers. That's also an important thing. If you think something that is unique, it probably will already be done because everything's done. But experiment. But also look beyond that. I think, especially now in the world we live in, do some mixing classes, do some video editing classes even, that you can maybe put a reel together and expand. Don't focus only on your craft, also expand your world to other things. I love to start on script, because it happens a few times with me that I could start from script, because then you have a focus on the story, because you don't have anything else. And then once you see that script transform in image, your world also opens with it, so the themes that are already there on script, they can evolve into something else. For me, it was important that the whole film was the same film, you know, because there's more an adventure part to it, but there's also a very emotional part to it, and getting those two into the same film was really the challenge for this film. That you didn't feel that it was like really separated adventurous versus emotion. And that was really achieved through sound, through the use of instrumentation, like little percussion, little wooden percussion, all the wooden instruments like the marimba or the African marimba, all linking that together. I like to make sounds myself that have a link to the film. When I was in LA, I saw the film and I really was surprised by the power of the actor who played the waterman. And so I asked the assistant editor if I could have all the non-dialogue takes of that actor. And so I got all the screams and the shouts and the whispers sent over, and then I put it through delays and tapes, and I made a soft synth out of it, the waterman synth. So that's really the waterman synth. Really low, but really wide. And then David really liked that, and he said at some point, can't we do a similar thing with the mother? That like when Gunnar is alone in the forest, that his mother is with him. So I got a vocalist to my studio, Judith O'Conn, and I just recorded some long notes with her. It's a different energy than the waterman scent. It's very womb-like, almost, like you're safe, you're in a safe place, but at the same time, it's also a bit eerie and very wide.
As a composer, you're not bound to the use of orchestral instruments. You can use whatever your heart desires, as long as the director likes it. However, for the waterman, that is what Peter ended up using. He and Matt Dunkley, the orchestrator, set out to create the music. But hold up, what is an orchestrator?
A composer writes the music, and that can be just like a sketch pad. It can be like four staffs where you have your ID. And in the old days, and there are still composers working like that, where they make eight staff sketching. And they sent that to the orchestrator with some notes, and the orchestrator translated that to the orchestra. He can really choose the colors, like putting in the oboe, it's rather going to be clarinet or whatever. You know? That's really the job of the orchestrator.
To further along Peter's point, in cases where time is tight, a composer will work with an orchestrator to help develop the sizing of the orchestra, give the melody to a certain instrument, determine how the harmony will be broken up between the string section, etc. Here's an example. The composer might write something like this. And the orchestrator might create this from that same melody and harmony. A composer is usually also responsible for creating great-sounding MIDI mockups. A mock-up is a digitized version of a live-recorded soundtrack, using pre-recorded instrument libraries. These libraries can be controlled with a MIDI keyboard within a digital audio workspace, or DAW for short. MIDI, or Musical Instrument Digital Interface, is a protocol developed in the 1980s, which allows electronic instruments to communicate with computers. MIDI doesn't make any sound. It's just a series of messages, like play this note, hold it for so long, etc. With the addition of MIDI and virtual libraries in your DAW, you can create music that sounds extremely close to the real thing. And depending on the budget of the project, some only use mockups for their final soundtrack. Others have the budget to hire real live musicians. Nowadays, many directors and producers expect a composer to have good mockup chops. It's just how it is.
I think it's very important. I got a compliment from the producers that they say that the mockups really were good quality. And I think it's important to sell an idea. If your idea sounds crappy, they're going to focus on the crappy sound and not so on the idea. But if it's well crafted and already sounds very, very good. And that were the reactions that I got from David on it. It was always amazing, great. Because I took really the time to craft the mockups. I stayed in Cubase in MIDI as long as possible, but I mixed the mockups. I worked very hard on the samples, to get the right samples, to get to the right ideas. And some of these things stayed in mockup and went eventually in the queue. But it's really important, and it's also a thing that I learned when I started doing the work at Berkeley. There's several courses in composing for film, TV and game. They really focus on the programming and working with your modulation, with your expression programming, the human feel of an orchestra, not putting in too many notes. Always think that there's a human behind the notes that you put in your mockup. Because when I started doing it in advertising, I always felt that my orchestral cues weren't powerful enough because I didn't know how to do it. So I had like 20 violin tracks and 13 brass tracks on top of each other. And it's just following the rules of the orchestra makes that you can make something powerful. There's really a century-long thought behind the construction of an orchestra sound. And if you respect that in your MIDI mockup, then you can get that big sound.
And that's all for today's episode. A big thanks to Peter Bart for coming on the show. Check out his work on his website, PeterBaert.com, or click the link in the description. You can watch The Waterman soon on Netflix. The Production Specialist is hosted by Black Dagger Audio, an audio production and post-production studio based in Dubai, UAE, specializing in custom sound design, original music, VO, and dialogue editing. You can visit our website for any project inquiries at blackdaggeraudio.com. If you have enjoyed listening to this podcast, there are three things that will help benefit this show. First is to share this with someone who has interest in the production industry. Second is to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And third is to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/productionspecialist. We have member exclusive benefits such as behind the scenes, bloopers, sitting in on live interviews, early access to episodes, and much, much more. And that is it. Thank you so much. See you next time.